happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Ann Northrup, and in for the traveling Andy Hum is...
Maren Johns. Hello. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Maren. I've broken out my Christmas red.
You look terrific.
Thank you.
I'm wearing my Christmas plaid.
I think that's very traditional for Christmas, especially for Hallmark movies, which we're going to talk about at the end of the show. Stay tuned for that. But happy holidays to everybody. And I apologize if you're hearing construction noise in the background here. When we're, I hope, in the studio, back in the studio in a couple of weeks, we'll get rid of that. But meanwhile, we're stuck with whatever we can do. We have a ton of news today. And I am just flipping because I have forgotten. Oh, yeah. Okay. So in the news this week, of course, you probably have heard Pope Francis has declared priests may bless people in same-sex relationships, but not the relationships.
And a young Florida activist has confronted Bridget Ziegler directly at a school board meeting. We'll show you the video.
It's fascinating, and you'll recognize this young activist. St. Louis cops plowed their car into a gay bar, beat up the bar owner, and then arrested him for assault.
And in Colorado, we have folks trying to keep Trump off the presidential ballot. Looks like he might be banned from that state from running.
Don't hold your breath. Meanwhile, activists here in New York are organizing to save democracy from the heinous Project 2025. We have a great video explainer about Project 2025.
And a beloved New York City artist and activist has died far too soon.
Very sad. And an Ohio news anchor has come out on air. More video.
And I believe you're going to, Anne, review that fabulous Hallmark historic lesbian holiday film.
Well, I guess it's historic. I can't say it's brilliant, but we'll talk in more detail at the end of the show. Meanwhile, the big news is the Pope. And because this is our top story, we are bringing in our special Vatican correspondent direct from London. There he is.
Hey,
it's Andy Hum.
I was a Catholic until 1982.
How well we know, and because you have been covering these issues for most of your life, we thought you deserve the chance to comment on this development.
Well, you know, I mean, the good news in all this is that the world thinks that the Pope's authorized the blessing of gay relationships because those are the headlines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I'm staying at the home of Reverend Bernard Lynch, who has been working on these issues for 50 years, and he's been talking to the press a lot about this. And he says he says it's a seismic shift. The Guardian says it's not a seismic shift. But anyway, he reminds us that the last pope, just the last pope, labeled us disordered and evil at the height of the AIDS pandemic. But he says it led to losing all respect for the church authority in the global north. And it's a rebuke to the fundamentalism in the global south and in the right-wing religions, evangelicals, Orthodox Judaism, Islam, all the ones that condemn us. So he says, look, it's not going all the way. That would require women's ordination, same-sex marriage. But he and his husband, Billy, aren't going to, after 30 years, be running off for a blessing from another priest. But on the other hand, we got to look at the fine print on this thing, right? The blessing is not of, as you said, of gay relationships, but of the people in it. It can't be done in conjunction with a civil union ceremony, nor can the couple be wearing any clothing that we would wear to a wedding.
So no white, no rings. Wow, that's limiting things a little.
So, you know,
no veils.
So, you know, Father James Martin, a Jesuit priest, who we have a picture of him doing this, He lobbied for this change with the Pope, his fellow Jesuit. He did a simple blessing for this couple, Jason Steedle-Jack and Damien Steedle-Jack. They were married a long time ago. And the blessing was just basically, may the Lord's light shine upon you. I mean, it's nothing specific to their relationship or anything like that. But, you know, for a lot of people, this is very, very moving and very, very changed. And it's all part of Francis, you know, pushing through reforms. He's 87. He's in failing health. He got rid of some of the ultra hardliners, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And, to quote them about what this actually is, and this is the language, the blessing is meant to express openness to the transcendence, mercy, and closeness to God and a thousand concrete circumstances of life, which is no small thing in the world in which we live. It's a seed of the Holy Spirit that must be nurtured, not hindered. Well, so they expect older priests will be more open to doing this. They came in during Vatican II. The younger ones are very conservative because who would join an institution that, you know, doesn't even let women become priests?
Well, I just read that 80% of U.S. young priests identify as conservative or orthodox. Ooh, sure. It's really shocking. But I, you know, I have zero interest in religion, but I can see very clearly how moved people are by having this now available to them. And that I think that is tremendously significant.
Yes, yes. And you know, the church has allowed the blessing of pets now for centuries.
Cars.
That's unbelievable. Andy, I've got a question for you. What if a parishioner, you know, gay Catholic parishioners went to their local priest and asked for the blessing and they were denied? Is there any finer print, any caveat in there where are priests allowed to just refuse to bless couples?
It's going to be up to the priest, and it's all supposed to be done not in the context of liturgy, you know, where they have ceremonies and things. But the statement does say when people ask for a blessing, an exhaustive moral analysis should not be placed as a precondition for conferring it. They should not be required to prove moral perfection. Hmm. And that's it. You know,
it's they just go down the street to the next Catholic church and ask for a blessing from a different priest. There will be plenty of priests, I'm sure, who will perform this. But meanwhile, the U.S. Catholics are considerably more to the right than the Pope is these days. And I've just been reading a long piece in the LA Times about this guy, Tim Bush, B-U-S-C-H, on the West Coast, who is the upholder of everything right wing. And he recently staged this march of Catholic priests down Broadway in New York City. Look at them there.
I saw it. I thought it was part of a show.
Well, of course. I mean, whoever got that picture got a great picture. But the U.S. in particular, as well as presumably the right wingers in Africa or South America or Eastern Europe or wherever, are not happy about this. And they're talking about the church splitting, which is pretty revolutionary talk among Catholicism. But it's certainly being received as a landmark. I mean, he talked about this a few months ago as something that people could do. And this is just the official edict that lays out the details of it. But I congratulate those to whom this is enormously meaningful.
And you have my blessing, and I know you have a lot of news, so on with the show. Thanks for having me.
Go Thanks, have dinner Andy. In London, Andy. Have a great time. Thank you for reporting in on Father Lynch, and give our best to him.
I will.
Okay. Well, any further thoughts on that, Maren?
Look, I think there's 61 million Catholics in United States, I think. Is that correct? So this is affecting a lot of people. And while there is a schism, I can see it happening. It's not just in the Catholic Church. The studies are showing that it's happening with the Methodists as well. But look, I'm in favor of anything that's for spirit, because if we can't have our cake and eat it too and say religion is, you know, part of our government. It's really a matter of spirit, isn't it? It's like this is sending a huge message out to families, and I think to gay Catholics who might have felt, you know, they were getting the cold shoulder from their community or from their families. So I think this is helpful to those.
And it's also been interesting to me over the years that in the United States, in polling, Catholics are the religiously affiliated group that is most in favor consistently of same-sex marriage. So they're
well, don't they say Catholics, lesbians, and swans marry for life? Don't they say that?
If you say so, that'll be my new mantra. All right. Well, let's. I want to bring up this thing that just happened in Florida because we have been writing the story of Christian and Bridget Ziegler, the Republican leaders and Moms for Liberty leaders in Florida, who are such hypocrites, who admitted to a three-way with another woman, who is now accusing the husband of raping her. You know, we don't care if people have three ways except when they're hypocrites about it. But the Republican Party in Florida has asked the husband, Christian Ziegler, to step down, and he has refused. They have taken away his power. They have reduced him to a $1 annual salary, but he is not giving up. He won't quit. And she, Bridget Ziegler, is also not quitting. The Sarasota School Board has asked her to resign. She won't do it. They want her off the Disney Oversight Board. She won't do that. So at a meeting of the Sarasota School Board, guess who showed up to talk to her? Xander Marich, who you may remember from a year and a half ago, who was graduating from a high school in Florida in the middle of the Don't Say Gay explosion. And he got up and he was the class president. He gave a speech. He was told not to mention that he was gay. So he gave a speech about his curly hair.
That's right.
Which was a great dodge. So he came to this school board meeting, and here's what he had to say to Bridget Ziegler.
Bridget, our first ever interaction was when you retweeted a hate article about me from The Nationalist while I was a Sarasota County school student. You are a reminder that some people view politics as a service to others, while some view it as an opportunity for themselves. On this board, you have spent public funds that could have been used to increase teacher pay, to change our district lines for political gain, remove books from schools, target trans and queer children, erase Black history, and elevate your political career, all while sending your children to private schools because you do not believe in the public school system that you've been leading. My question is, why doesn't an elected official using our money to harm our students and our teachers for her gain seem to matter as much to us as her having a threesome does? Bridget Ziegler, you do not deserve to be on the Sarasota County School Board, but you do not deserve to be removed from it for having a threesome. That defeats the lesson we've been trying to teach you, which is that a politician's job is to serve their community, not to police personal lives. So, to be extra clear, Bridget, you deserve to be fired from your job because you are terrible at your job, not because you had sex with a woman.
Oh, boy, that's just terrific. I mean, the hypocrisy is astonishing with these people. And he basically accuses the Zieglers of being in it for the power, which, you know, you really can't disagree with at this point.
Oh, no. And they're just monsters at this point for having no grace, no humility, no willingness to concede that perhaps they're not wanted anymore. They just want to hang on by their fingernails as much as they can. Now, also going after power are police officers in St. Louis, a few of them, who recently ran their police car into the front of a gay bar, not evidently on purpose, maybe because they were drunk. We don't know that for sure yet. There is video of them sort of careening around the road before ending up in the door of this gay bar.
Wow.
But they get out of the car, and one of the owners comes out to confront them and starts yelling, "What the heck?" And they handcuff him. Then his husband, who is the co-owner of the bar, comes out and says, why are you handcuffing my husband? You're the ones who ran into my bar. And they arrest him, and then they take him off and they beat the hell out of him. He ends up with a black eye, bruises all over himself. He gave a press conference where he showed all his injuries. They held him for 36 hours and charged him with felony assault. And the prosecuting attorney has knocked it down to, you know, a simple assault or something. But he did nothing. They did nothing. The cops ran into their bar and then turned it into the guys assaulted them by yelling at them.
Yeah, so the bar owner is Chad Morris and his husband, James Pence. I believe in some of the video, he's actually dragged out of view into a laneway or a different
an
alley where they can't really see what's happening. But it does seem to me like allegedly defense by offense. It's like the cops are getting the first word in to try and make sure nothing comes out of this. But what a lot of damage they did. It all happened about 12:30 a.m.
And I have had a viewer complain to me that I'm too tough on the police and generalize too much about them. And I agree with that. I do generalize too much, and I apologize for that. But I am not going to overlook incidents like this that, George Floyd, on and on and on. And it's happened to us personally as activists, we must pay more attention. There are wonderful police officers doing their job who do valuable work for the community and do go out and find the bad people and bring them in. I am grateful for that. But the ones who are not good at their jobs do not deserve to keep them and need to be gotten rid of.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this case.
Yeah. Well, they did a little... Well, I was going to say a better job, but I'm not sure of that. Another incident in St. Louis, a trans woman sitting on a bus, a guy gets on and he's a little off and he starts, you know, harassing her. And he ends up just suddenly smacking her in the face, beating her violently. I'm not going to show you the video because it's too disturbing. And I just can't bring myself to do that. Maisie is her name. Well, the FBI has just put out a $10,000 reward for this. It happened in April. There's Maisie in better days. But she was really beaten viciously by this guy, and they have not gotten around to finding the guy who did it. The whole attack is on video on the bus.
Suspect still large. It's hard to know whether or not it was a transphobic attack, but when he started to harass her, she rebuffed his advances and said, "No thanks, I'd rather not." And he said, "Man, you sound like an old man." So there might have been something that triggered this person into a transphobic rage.
Well, whatever it was, we would hope that they would be able to get some resolution on this faster than the 8 months it's taken them so far.
And speaking of transphobic bashings, we had a bashing in a place where I wouldn't have expected it to happen, the Wynwood neighborhood of Miami. Some pretty confronting video showing lesbians being brutally beaten. I believe there was a trans person with them. The accounts of the victims say that they were verbally assaulted before being actually physically assaulted and beaten down after leaving an event in Wynwood on November the 26th. So, it's a group of guys, apparently, just started screaming anti-lesbian comments and vulgarities. And I think we're going to see some video, maybe.
There.
In Wynwood last month.
These men just assaulted my friend. I haven't recorded.
We blurred the victims' faces. But you can hear them pleading to stop the fighting and that they called the cops. The two men wearing white shirts are swinging at a man who was trying to stick up for the group of women he was with. The group of women, lesbians, and a transgender person.
The guys basically just started, like, screaming stuff at us, anti-lesbian comments, like, you're only lesbians because you haven't received actual, and he used a funny word.
And they just started out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
We this victim, who asked not to be identified, is seen on video getting punched 3 times and eventually got knocked out. She says the guys who attacked them started hurling gay slurs before getting violent.
But I know that I had a messed up finger from the incident. They did strike me in the jaw, and on my jaw, I'm like now having to potentially have a hairline fracture, and I may need to have surgery. So it's been very difficult time. Plus, not to add the nightmares of like feeling attacked and that seeing my friend on the floor unresponsive with blood.
Her badly beaten friend also spoke to us. She doesn't remember much about what happened because she was also punched and lost consciousness.
I definitely felt targeted, for sure. I mean, they were definitely trying to, you know, hate on the fact that we were gay. I don't know why. I don't understand to this day why.
The victims believe the men who attacked them are professional fighters and gave police the identity of one of them. Miami Police tells NBC6 in a statement, "We are actively working on the case. Like any investigation, we have to dot the I's and cross the T's. We are working with our LGBTQ+ liaison and SAO hate crime task force. We have to make sure we have everything lined up before we initiate our arrests." Welcome news from victims who say they just want justice.
It's very, very concerning to see that they're still out and about and they're free and nothing's happening to them yet.
That's really shocking.
Far too much of it. In Phoenix, Arizona, the police have announced that they have noticed that there is a growing number of murders of gay men. They have three separate cases that they've identified at the moment that they're working on. And so they're looking into whether there is something behind this whole list of cases. So, Phoenix, be careful.
Arizona, unfortunately, doesn't have a hate crime statute, I believe. So that's going to be a little difficult to prove. But anyway, we'll prosecute.
Well, you know, assault, murder is murder. And hate crime statutes can be useful, but they shouldn't be necessary to be solving murders. Back to Florida and Tallahassee, Stephen Yinger has been convicted of the murder and robbery of a marriage activist, Jorge Diaz Johnston, who took him in. That's Jorge on the right in this picture with his husband, Don Johnston, who was wrongly accused at first by the police of committing the murder, overlooking the fact that the actual murderer, who had a record as long as your arm and had been in prison repeatedly and was just out and taken in by Jorge, was the much more likely candidate. Well, Yinger has now been convicted of murder and of robbing the house and has been given a life sentence for this crime.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
No good deed goes unpunished.
And on a slightly less dire note, no murders involved that we know of. Matt Schlapp, the head of the American Conservative Union, who we have discussed as being the subject of charges by a guy who worked for Herschel Walker, a gay man who worked for Herschel Walker, of groping him and sexually assaulting him. Well, now a couple of other men have come forward to charge that they also were sexually abused by Matt Schlapp in 2017 and 2022, and that the American Conservative Union knew about this and did nothing, just ignored it, which is, you know, power.
It's appalling.
It is.
I wonder if they are gonna get him. Goodness. While we're speaking of strange Republicans, did we want to mention that the black gay Republican young man who was heckled at a MAGA event?
Yeah, he's a little, you know, a little too full of himself. Is this Bob Smith? Is that his name?
Yeah, Rob Smith, Army veteran, shared this video on Twitter about, I hate calling it X, I'm going to call it Twitter. Basically, he was at this, you know, right-wing event, which is for the Turning Point USA's America Fest. The Turning Point has become a nonprofit that backs a lot of right-wing causes, as we know, and candidates. And basically, they started to, the white boys, looking very frat-like, started to, in Phoenix, basically, you know, verbally assault this guy, calling him the N-word, the F-word, all sorts of things. Rob Smith didn't seem too upset at the time. He was filming it all, but I was still pretty shocked, even if it was in jest, even if it was like a really kind of horrible a fraternity house ribbing, it still shows you what they really think on the right.
Well, what they're willing to say, certainly, in some context like that. The turning, well, we're about to get to the Stop the Coup organizing meeting that took place in New York this last weekend. And this is a new group organizing to fight the right-wing attempt to take over the government and destroy democracy. But we had a couple of panels of speakers, and one of the speakers was Jeff Charlotte, who is a hero of mine, who has been investigating the Christian nationalist right wing and their power grab for years, most well known for his book, The Family, which was turned into a Netflix documentary. Please, please, please look at that. And he talked about Turning Point. That's a different panel at the our Stop the Coup town hall. And that's the town hall attendees. Jeff Charlotte said, you know, Turning Point is really one of the most dangerous organizations around. They have enormous power in the Republican Party. They are a younger group, very vicious, very Proud Boys types, and they are controlling a lot of what's going on. So this Stop the Coup effort is about the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, 900-page plan for how to take over the government and what to do once you get it. And that involves firing all the federal workers, replacing them with their own people, who can be fired at will, forget civil service rules anymore. But they wanted no more regulation of nuclear power. That's up for grabs for anyone who wants to do it. Erase all gay people, throw all immigrants out of the country. The military will be in charge of policing a lot of the United States. It's all about installing a dictatorship under their rules. So we came across a new video explainer that boils the 900 pages down to 4 minutes of video by Alan Piper, a veteran journalist who made this for Courier Newsroom. And this is worth watching.
If you haven't heard about Project 2025, stop what you're doing and watch this. Project 2025 is a plan for Trump's second term that would transform America into a far-right Christian nationalist militarized state. You can read the nearly 1,000-page plan for yourself at project2025.org so you can know I am not exaggerating. Three key facts. Number one. A mass firing purge that Trump authorized before the 2020 election but never got to act on is at the center of Project 2025. Now, more than 2 million Americans across the country are part of the federal civilian workforce. Scientists at scientific agencies, doctors at the FDA, accountants at the IRS. We want experts doing jobs that require expertise. But more than 50,000 of them would be fired under this plan and replaced with MAGA loyalists, who would use the power of these agencies to fundamentally change the nature of America without needing to involve Congress. Number two, Project 2025 is a far-right Christian nationalist agenda. By page five, they're already proclaiming pornography should be outlawed, the people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned, educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. This would be alarming enough if they were talking about actual pornography. But their definition spans anything that acknowledges the existence of LGBTQ people. They claim on page 451 that families comprised of a married mother, father, and their children are the foundation of a well-ordered nation and healthy society, thereby designating queer people, single parents, unmarried co-parents, and people who get abortions as inherently inferior and a threat to the state. On page 584, they call for the Department of Labor to explicitly give companies permission to discriminate against LGBTQ Americans. On page 450, they also declare that life begins at conception, and abortion is, quote, not healthcare. Accordingly, the FDA would ban abortion medications, as detailed on page 458. The administration would also seek to strip abortion services and contraception from health plans. See pages 483 and 585. Number three, Project 2025 envisions a militarized police state where law enforcement is answerable only to the president. Maybe you live in a blue city or state and you think, I don't have to worry about my librarians being imprisoned? Guess again. Page 553 lays out how Trump's Justice Department will take over local law enforcement if they don't like how your own elected officials are running things. And they will prosecute district attorneys that they don't agree with. The plan also stripped the FBI director of their independence, making them a lackey of the president. See page 549. And on page 104, the plan reduces the number of military generals, so power is more fully consolidated in the commander-in-chief. A central focus of the new police state would be Trump's goal of undertaking
the largest domestic deportation operation in American history.
Immigration enforcement is to be conducted like a war, with the military deployed within the U.S., and millions of immigrants rounded up and thrown into newly constructed mass holding camps. A powerful new border security and immigration agency would replace the Department of Homeland Security. See page 133. This would also mean that DHS's efforts to combat far-right domestic terrorists would stop altogether. One plan that is not in the public document, but that members of the Project 2025 team reportedly disclosed to the Washington Post, is to invoke the Insurrection Act to have the military suppress public protests against Trump. I'm just scratching the surface. The plan is loaded with actions ranging from changing labor rules to effectively end overtime pay, that's on page 592, to slaughtering wild horses, that's on page 528. You can do your own deep dive on their website, project2025.org. I'm Alan Piper at A Piper 13.
This is not just hysterical scaremongering. This is real.
Yeah, I hope that I hope that is circulated, that video and the document is investigated. It's like Russia meets Weimar Germany. And, you know, we got a taste of what this might look like. Do you remember when Trump was selecting his clown car of a cabinet? I mean, that was enough for me. And we saw where that ended with the insurrection. So
worse next time, because the cabinet is going to be just right wing crazies. And look forward to Stephen Miller in the cabinet. StopTheCoup2025.org is the website for the new organization. The town hall, thank you for the pictures to Jackie Rudin and Donna Aceto. And we'll keep telling you week by week what's going on with the effort to get organized about this. And it just on a smaller scale, in New York City, we see that parents who are elected to the Community Education Council have been discovered slamming trans kids, LGBTQ kids, and anti-racist education on a WhatsApp line. This is from the top to the bottom. This stuff is happening. And I think we have a picture of a poster that details a lot of this there. Responding to social justice rhetoric. This is a right-wing publication that goes down every issue and how to give the right-wing response. Ugh, scary.
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to ask you about Colorado. I mean, and what Colorado is doing to try and ban Trump from running. You seem pretty skeptical about it. But again, all of the breaking news alerts and the headlines are saying, you know, the headline goes something like Colorado bans Trump from running for president. Give us the breakdown, Anne. Why did it happen?
I lived in Colorado. I love Colorado. I couldn't be prouder of them doing this. And all the lawyers on TV say this is a brilliant, brilliant decision that in the best of all possible worlds would be upheld. But I think I'm being pragmatic when I predict that the Supreme Court is not going to go along with this. They will find some excuse to overturn it. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams that Trump will be thrown off the ballot in this way. And if they do, then we're flirting with civil war.
Right.
But, you know, so everyone's saying, look, we want to beat him at the ballot box, not this way, because they're scared of a civil war. we'll see what happens, but I would certainly bet against that decision.
I mean, it's a precedent, isn't it? Again, another one. I wonder how more precedents Trump is going to set for us.
Well, it's being described as a case of first impression, which means it's never happened before in quite this way. They have prevented people from ballots if they were too young or not otherwise qualified, but never anything like this.
This is covered under the Constitution by the 14th Amendment's insurrectionist ban.
Yeah.
That's what they're hoping to say.
I'm going to race through things because I can see that we have a lot to do still and not much time. In Oklahoma, Governor Stitt has issued an executive order defunding all the college and state agency anti-discrimination efforts and teaching gone bye-bye. But in Wisconsin, legislators are working on repealing the state constitutional amendment they passed some years ago forbidding same-sex marriage. This is all in anticipation of the Supreme Court overturning the right to same-sex marriage and throwing it back to the states. And a lot of the states have leftover bans that they ignored when the previous Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage. So we have to get our ducks in order to get rid of those constitutional amendments, or we're in a heap of trouble. So good luck in Wisconsin. In Ohio, the legislature has passed a ban on trans youth health care and trans participation in school sports. We're waiting to see whether the governor will sign that. That's Governor DeWine, who is a Republican, who has vetoed bad stuff in the past. But so we don't know what he's going to do. That's a day-by-day decision. A couple of leftover Catholic things. The National Catholic Reporter named Sister Janine Gramick Newsmaker of the Year. She's with New Ways Ministry. She's the one who has been working on these issues forever. That's her.
Yes, 50 years. And good on her for, you know, cozying up a little bit to Francis. Apparently they get on very well, and she should take some credit for, I think, bending his thoughts in our direction in the past few years.
Well, interestingly, we've been skeptical of her efforts over the years because we thought she was too gentle and too optimistic. But, you know, she waited them out, and things are changing. And they're changing in Indiana at Notre Dame, the town where St. Mary's College, a Catholic college for women, is admitting trans women, like several other Catholic women's colleges. The right wing is up in arms about it, including Bishop Strickland, the disgraced bishop. He feels he has the right to start talking about trans women at Catholic women's colleges, but they're going ahead and doing it. So that's a good thing. Uh-huh. Not such a good thing is that staff member of the U.S. Senate who worked for Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland, who it's very strange. A video was posted that purported to show a guy on a desk in a Senate hearing room receiving anal sex. We don't see the guy giving anal sex. There's some confusion about who these people are. The guy receiving claims it really wasn't him, although, you know, you can see his face. And he's been fired by Senator Cardin. And of course, the right wing is just using this and going to town with it. I'm a little confused about this story.
The whole thing is bizarre. I mean, where is security? First of all, you got two guys entering a room. One of them's obviously wearing a GoPro headset. I mean, it's just bizarre, but, you know, and what did they do it for? It was just very fetishistic, very outright.
Yeah, and it's very sort of mechanical. It doesn't look like there's any energy being put into it, but whatever. And the good news out of the Congress is that they passed the Defense Department funding. Well, that's always questionable good news, but they took out all the anti-LGBTQ stuff.
There was a lot of it. So breathe a sigh of relief this time round.
Well, they've left in no pride flags on military bases, no drag shows, and no teaching CRT, critical race theory.
Yes.
But it passed the House and the Senate, and that's a good thing. Meanwhile, 39 organizations, including LGBT ones, have written to Biden and the Homeland Secretary Mayorkas to say, look, as you're negotiating for more funding for Ukraine and Israel, please don't make some deal on border stuff that prevents LGBTQ asylum seekers from coming here. That is bad. Yeah. And Clarence Thomas has been now revealed as not just receiving all this money from people, but asking for it.
Wow.
So it's getting worse and worse. But of course, no one can touch him because he has life tenure and they won't institute ethics, real rules. But another dozen trans attorneys have been admitted to the Supreme Court bar. That's some of them there with the guy in the middle with the blue shirt and suit coat is Representative Robert Garcia from California, who sponsored a lot of this. That's the second group of trans attorneys admitted to the Supreme Court bar. And you have to prove your credentials that you're worthy of this. So congratulations.
And this is in addition to the 10 that were admitted not so long ago, I think.
Yeah. A couple more things I want to get to. In Ohio, news anchor Taylor Brock came out on the air and it was quite charming. And we want to show you her doing that.
Well, I know we both are from Ohio, but do you have to travel anywhere this holiday season?
No, not really. Well, I guess I do. I'll go to like an hour and 45 minutes to my parents' house, but it's actually really nice for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But I got to stay home. My family came to me.
Look at
it was
you.
Beautiful.
Very spoiled. No. I know the extent of my traveling is probably going to Cleveland to visit my girlfriend. That's about
it. Not too bad. Not too bad.
Well, as families everywhere are organizing their plans for the holiday season, AAA is predicting more than 55 million people will travel 50 miles or more.
That was
she just snuck it in like that. That one word. It was lovely.
You saw the picture of her with her girlfriend at the top of the tape. There was another picture of them at a football game. They are gorgeous. But I think we've misplaced that picture, so I can't show you that. Maybe.
Well, she did it very well. And I think it's as it should be. Just slip it in under the net there like it's a normal everyday thing. This is what I'm doing for the holidays. So I hope they have a fabulous time in Cleveland.
And then we want to just take a minute to mourn the loss of a wonderful New York artist and activist, Nancy Brooks Brody, who died. She's in the middle of that picture. And Fierce Pussy, as you see at the top of the picture, was an arts collective that came out of ACT UP. That's Joy Epicella on the left and Carrie Yamoka on the right. And Zoe Leonard was the other founding member, the four of them. And Nancy, she was so beloved and such a wonderful artist. You know, she was an artist as a sculptor and a painter. But when these women got together coming out of ACT UP, it was to do activist art on the street, wheat pasting posters of all sorts and just running around town, having a great time and being very in your face about their art. And people are just weeping when I run into them now at her death because she was so fantastic and so loved and so missed. She was funny. She was angry. Their art was, and it's just a tragedy for her to die so young at 61.
Yeah, gone too soon. I remember some of her work, and I love the way she was inspired by her early days as a kind of a club kid going to the Pyramid Club and Danceteria. And you know, if you remember how you promoted nights in those places were those posters wrapped around telegraph poles. So I love the way she appropriated all of that for a form of activism.
Just, I can't tell you how loved she was and is in the community. And if you look up Nancy Brooks Brody, B-R-O-D-Y, known as Brody, you'll find wonderful, wonderful stories about her and her work and just such a loss. So we'll move on now to international news. And first of all, a long-awaited verdict in a murder case in the UK. Breonna Gay, I guess it is, G-A-G-Y, a young trans girl, 16 years old, murdered in Northern England, stabbed 22 times dead. A 16-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl have been on trial for several weeks for her murder, and they have been convicted now. They planned this whole thing out. They wrote about it. They stalked her. They lured her to a park. They attacked her. It's just unbelievable how vicious and cruel this murder was. So the jury took just 4 hours to reach a unanimous verdict after a 3.5 week trial. But it's been a notorious case in England, and glad that it's finally reached a resolution.
Near Manchester, and the girl X and boy Y, needless to say, turned on each other while giving evidence. So a couple of charmers there.
Yes, they blamed each other. Each tried to absolve themselves and blame the other, but they've both been convicted. Yeah. And what about the new president of Argentina?
Up to no good, only a matter of weeks after taking office. He's done a kind of a reshuffle of his departments, definitely trying to look like he's just getting things in order. But really what he's done is eliminate the Women, Gender and Diversity Ministry. He was only taking office, what, December the 10th? So that's fast work. This is a sign that I know a lot of my Argentinian friends are worried about, all this listing to the right. Basically, he's just saying, I'm, you know, fixing the government structure, and he's going to put those duties underneath the human capital minister, Sandra Viviana Petovello, of course, get a woman to do it. The decree mandates the commitments and obligations assumed by the Ministry of Women, Gender and Diversity will now be under the Ministry of Human Capital. So bye-bye DEI and all of your other stuff.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
In Afghanistan, the Taliban has arrested an LGBTQ activist, Fareed Fakhouri. So now, as in Navalny in Russia, we will be trying to follow what happens to him under arrest.
Yes, this is only a few weeks ago this happened. So the Taliban haven't confirmed that they have him, but he's very, very high profile LGBT activist in the region. I do fear for him.
In Uganda, the Constitutional Court this week has held a hearing on the legality of the Anti-Homosexuality Act that was passed this year after a back and forth history over the last few years. This is the bill that allows for the death penalty of LGBTQ people for certain acts in certain ways. That has been challenged by activists in Uganda. The court earlier refused to annulled a previous version of the bill because they said it was done the wrong way in parliament. The parliament seems to have fixed its act of passing it, but now we get to see whether the court has the guts to say the bill is unconstitutional.
And speaking of courts, over in Moldova, I feel like I'm at the Eurovision Song Contest. Moldova! They've actually awarded a Soviet Moldova, nonetheless, a gay soldier around $6,700 as compensation for ill treatment he suffered while serving in a military unit. Marin Pavlescu served in Moldova's defense ministry, and basically they've been ordered to pay him. He was going for $84,000, but the court did award much smaller damages on grounds that he was denied, quote, the right to respect and protection.
What a concept. Meanwhile, in Britain, they're going back and forth debating payments to gay soldiers who were discharged. Mm-hmm. And there's, the U.S. is just opening up the ability for the government to go ahead and investigate those cases without someone having to go and complain and demand payments. So slowly but surely. Meanwhile, the comic relief story of the week comes from Russia, where a Siberian official has condemned a new ice cream ad that is supposed to show what he-men Siberians are for eating ice cream in the middle of winter in shorts outside. And the Siberian official says, it's too gay.
It does come off. I mean, it does. I think it looks lovely, but it does come off as being open to interpretation. Goodness me, the Siberians need to come into the 21st century with their PR, don't they? Yes.
I think if it were really gay, the guys would be a lot more buff and probably be wearing even fewer clothes. But if that's what the Siberian official says, who are we to judge? And and FIFA has come out with a new report, the World Soccer Organization, revisiting the Women's World Cup this year and saying that there was just this unbelievable torrent of homophobic and sexist abuse from people online against the female soccer players in the tournament. Just an egregious assault of attacks online. And I'm glad they're documenting it. But boy, imagine these women are trying to play a world championship and they're just getting assaulted with all this attack.
Proud to say I saw it when I was down in Aussie land for the grand final. I saw a lot of straight women just loving, you know, our home team and the captain, and it really did stir inspired and warm feelings. So I'm happy about that. And also while in Aussie land, our trans athlete, I don't know if we can say that she's an athlete, but Jamie Gumbrell has won the World Croquet Championship, which I used to play at my girls' high school. Jamie's become the first out trans woman to win the Women's World Croquet Federation Championship.
Here are second from left holding the Winner's Cup.
Yes.
And others around her.
Yes, and the president of the Federation, Ian Burridge, did tell the right-leaning Telegraph in the UK, the fact that Jamie was assigned male at birth is not disputed by anyone. Jamie now identifies as female, as her entry into the World Championships was determined in accordance with our policy approved by our members in April 2022.
Well, you have to wonder what kind of advantage a trans woman would have in croquet.
That mallet is heavy, Anne. It really is. Next, they'll be banning trans from medicine ball, which was the other thing I had to play in high school. You know, when you have to roll a very heavy ball between your legs. Yes.
I was more of a field hockey girl myself. And there's a dispute in the UK about the government, the Conservative government, putting out guidance for how schools should treat kids who are questioning their gender identity. And the government guidance is quite conservative and says, you know, really, you should be very skeptical of this and you should bring the parents into this. And the LGBTQ community is getting up in arms about it. I'm sure we'll hear more about that. But perhaps we should move on to entertainment news.
Absolutely, because I know you are dying to talk about your Hallmark encounter.
Well, first, because we have it first on the list, we've started a weekly event here at Gay USA, Gay Moments in Game Shows. I just made up that title. So this week's event comes to us from Jeopardy, where they're staging a Champions Wildcard Tournament, qualifying people to a new Tournament of Champions. And the winner last week was I just laugh when I see him because he's so funny. Young Sheng Wong, a public defender in real life, but quite a character on Jeopardy, out gay man. And he was the winner. And when he won, he jumped up and down and he ran over to his fellow contestants and hugged them. And it was really quite a sight. But he won by being the only one to answer Final Jeopardy correctly. And the Final Jeopardy category was monuments. And the answer was something about, the name of this monument is named after a business that is across the street from Christopher Park.
That's
well,
right.
That was no tough question for us gay New Yorkers.
No.
But, you know, one guy.
I would have gotten this designated in 2016, a New York City monument named for this place of business. Yes.
Ridiculous. One guy guessed the World Trade Center. No, no, you're miles off. And I can't even remember what the other one guessed, but it, again, was very wrong. And so then they go to him because he was in the lead. So they go to him last and they reveal his question answer. And he says, "What is the Stonewall?" And Ken Jennings is so excited. "Yes, it's the Stonewall Inn, and you are the big winner." And he jumps up and down, and it really was a sort of landmark moment in game show gay history. And Young Shin will be going on to the Tournament of Champions, so we will follow him for more landmark moments there. But yes, Hallmark. So Hallmark is touting our first Christmas movie with a lesbian lead story. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, didn't Kristen Stewart do a lesbian Christmas movie a couple of years ago?
Yes.
And the answer is yes. Kristen Stewart, Aubrey Plaza, that's not these two. But it was a Hulu show. So this is a Hallmark show, which given their history is also a landmark. So this is Ali Liebert on the left and hold on.
Humberly Gonzalez on the right.
Humberly Gonzalez. They're both out in real life. Ali's very successful as not only a star of Hallmark movies, but a director of many of them. They have both played lesbian in previous movies, but before they were out in real life. So this is really everything coming together. The movie is called Friends and Family Christmas. You can catch up with it on the Hallmark channel because it will be repeated ad nauseum. And they are a couple set up by their parents. They're so out that their parents set them up on a blind date. And of course, at first, nothing, but then they slowly get involved, and then the trouble moment comes with 20 minutes left, and then they resolve that and live happily ever after. So it's the standard plot arc of a Hallmark movie. It's not the greatest one ever, and it's certainly not as good as the Kristen Stewart one on Hulu, which is called The Holiday. No, that's a
happiest day. Season.
Happiest season. Thank you. Look that up on Hulu. But it's, you know, it's a nice little lesbian movie on the Hallmark Channel, if that's what you want to see. And Kate McKinnon and Billie Eilish.
I had fun watching Saturday Night Live. Terrific. Kate McKinnon in her opening monologue reminding us that she's gay. And being the crazy cat ladies together, Kate and Billy, that was a cute skit.
It was. And if you're looking for more LGBTQ Christmas, you can watch the Kennedy Center Honors next Wednesday, the 27th on CBS. Queen Latifah is being honored, introduced by Rita Moreno. And Ariana DeBose is performing a Bee Gees medley in honor of Barry Gibb.
Love her.
We're back to Australia. And Titus Burgess is performing too. I can't believe we got that all in. Thank you to Andy for dropping in. Congratulations to Catholics, gay Catholics. And Marin will be back next week. We'll see you then.
Happy holidays, guys.